NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, committed to building a more just, verdant, and peaceful world. More information at macfound.org.
News from NPR is made possible by a grant from Champaign-Danville Overhead Doors, offering pinch-proof doors, keyless digital entries, and lifetime manufacturer's warranties. Champaign-Danville Overhead Doors, serving businesses and families with professionally installed doors and automatic openers since 1959 in Ogden, Illinois.
This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580, FM 90.9 HD2, and online at will.illinois.edu. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. In this portion of the program, ideas for reducing energy costs and improving the energy efficiency of our homes. I'm pleased to welcome back to the program Jennifer Thorne Amon. She is with the American Council for an Energy Efficient Economy, or ACEEE. She's also the lead author of the Consumer Guide to Home Energy Savings. The guide offers consumers information and advice on saving money on big ticket and small ticket items. It offers suggestions on where to begin and what to aim for long term. Let me tell you a bit more about our guest. Jennifer Amon joined the American Council for an Energy Efficient Economy in 1997. She's the director of the organization's Buildings and Equipment Program. The publication Consumer Guide to Home Energy Savings, Save Money, Save the Earth, is published by New Society Publishers. You'll find a condensed version of the guide online. Google ACEEE Consumer Guide. That's A, C, and then three E's. The website is www.aceee.org/Consumer Guide. Listeners, I look forward to your questions. You can join us with a telephone call or by email. The phone number in the Champaign-Urbana area is 333-9455. Our toll-free number is 800-222-9455. The email address is will-talk@illinois.edu. So 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL, or email will-talk@illinois.edu. Jennifer Amon, welcome back to the program. How are you?
I'm good, Celeste. Thanks so much for having me back.
My pleasure. So tell us at the outset here about the mission of the American Council for an Energy Efficient Economy.
Well, our mission is to promote energy efficiency as both a means of economic security and economic development, as well as environmental protection. So we work in a number of areas related to energy efficiency. We have programs such as the program that I represent, working on buildings and equipment. So we, you know, any of the equipment that's in a building, appliances, electronics, building shell for commercial and residential buildings, any of that, we work on programs to promote the most efficient products, policy for establishing stronger appliance standards, for instance, methods of, you know, improving building stock through building codes for new buildings or improved retrofit practices for our existing building stock. And then I have colleagues who are doing similar work in the transportation sector, industry, agriculture, the utility sector. So we, you know, do a lot of our work. We have conferences. We do research, publish reports. We have a policy program. And then we also do a bit of consumer education through outlets like our Consumer Guide to Home Energy Savings.
And this radio program.
And this radio program, absolutely.
So how long have you been around?
ACEEE, we're celebrating our 30th anniversary
Wow.
this year.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
One of the things that we've been hearing off and on about recently, and people may have seen this in a mailing from their electric company, energy audits. What's involved in an energy audit? How useful are they?
Okay, well, you know, it can really depend. They run the gamut. The most basic kind of energy audit could be just someone from the utility, someone that the utility works with, coming out to your house and doing what would be called a simple walkthrough audit. And in that case, they may come in, look and see what kind of appliances you have, how old your appliances are, try to get a general sense of what kind of upgrades you may have done in your home based on the age of your home. They may have some recommendations about, if you need additional insulation, the age of your heating and cooling system, that kind of thing, what kind of lighting you're using. And that would be mostly based on what they could see, kind of a visual inspection of your house. They might go through a checklist with you and talk to you about opportunities that you would have to save energy. In some cases, the utility may even bring out some usually pretty simple measures that they could install right there on site. Mm. That might be swapping out some incandescent light bulbs for compact fluorescents. It could include low-flow fixtures for your shower head and your sinks. So some of those more simple things, some weather stripping, they might provide that. They may leave a kit for you to do that after you leave. So that would be on the more basic end of the home energy audit. And they range up to much more comprehensive studies where they might incorporate a billing analysis, looking at your utility bills over the last year to see how your usage compares to similar homes or homes in your climate. And then they may also do some pretty advanced diagnostic techniques, use diagnostic tools in your home, and this would include the use of something like called a blower door, which can gauge how much infiltration you have in your home and help you see, you know, in the winter how much cold air is getting in your home and then how much of your air-conditioned air is leaking out in the summertime. They can do a similar thing called a duct blaster where they see if your ducts are well sealed so that they're actually delivering the heated or cooled air to the rooms where you want it and not just dumping it in wall spaces, mm-hmm. which we find is quite common. And they may use some other techniques like that, infrared cameras to see where you may need to beef up your insulation and that kind of thing. So that would be on the other end. Usually these more comprehensive audits are done by contractors that could work with you through a program such as the Home Performance with Energy Star program or other programs to identify what fixes you need. And they might be able to even contract with you to do that work or to help you bring in the different contractors that you would need to do the work that needs to be done. So as you can imagine, those comprehensive audits can be much more effective in pinpointing exactly what you need to do in your home. But, you know, any energy audit, whether it's a simple walkthrough audit or a more comprehensive audit, is only as effective as the homeowner's decision to take the recommendations for the audit and actually implement those efficiency measures. Mm. We see a lot of places people go out, they do the audits, they give the homeowners the information, and then, you know, it just sits there in the audit report. And the homeowner doesn't actually act on the recommendation. So that's certainly the critical step. And there are things that can be done. You know, we see in some states and in some regions a much more focus on providing incentives, whether that's actual rebates or low-interest financing or other kinds of support to help homeowners, address the financial costs of doing the kinds of upgrades they need in their home, helping to match the homeowners with the kinds of contractors that can help them do that work. And we're also seeing that there's a real place for the auditor to do some education of the homeowner on the kinds of behavioral changes that they could do in their homes, usually pretty simple things that wouldn't even have a large impact on their comfort. You know, they're not going to tell them, turn your heat down to 60 degrees and put on sweaters. Not that kind of behavioral change, but other kinds of behavioral changes that can really make an impact and make a dent in your energy bill.
Yeah. Are there currently federal tax incentives for making energy-saving improvements to our homes?
There are. There are a number of tax incentives that are available now. Many of them are slated to expire at the end of this year.
Okay.
So this is definitely a year to see what those tax credits are. Mm-hmm. There's a website called energytaxincentives.org where we've tried to describe what the tax incentives are, kind of turn the legislative language and the IRS language into plain language that we can all understand, to see what products would qualify for the tax credit, what the process is that you have to go through to document what you've done, and to make sure you have the appropriate documentation on file where you'd be audited.
Okay, so energytaxincentives.org. I think I'm going to check that out later today. Online at your website, there is a home energy checklist for action. And this, to me, is like my own little walkthrough kind of audit that I can do myself. What are some of the things that we can do today that won't cost us anything or very little, but will pay off in terms of comfort and in terms of our energy bills?
Right. There are a number of kind of quick and easy things. The first is if you don't know what temperature your water heater is set on, or you haven't checked that out, and especially if you know that the water coming out of your hot water tap is very hot, you may want to go down and check the temperature on your water heater. We would recommend that be set at the warm setting. Usually your water heater will either have actual temperatures listed on it, you know, on the gauge, and you can turn it to 120 degrees. That's typically the warm setting. This is great. It'll save energy. In the past, water heaters had much higher temperatures to produce the kind of hot water you would want in your dishwasher, for instance. But the dishwashers sold today, most people's dishwasher would have a booster heater in it that would make sure the water is a hot enough temperature to sanitize the dishes. So you don't need that hot, hot water coming out of your water heater at all times. The nice thing about this one is, you know, you turn the water down, then you don't have to worry about scalding, which can be an issue, particularly if you have children
yeah.
in the house.
Yeah, okay. Also checking caulking, and that's another thing that's relatively inexpensive and very easy to do.
Mm-hmm. A simple thing that you can do is, you know, walk around the house. I mean, you may well know where your house is leaky, right?
Yeah.
You know that when you're in the living room, you know, maybe everybody's fighting over which chair they sit in and which one they avoid because that draft is coming in through the front door or so forth. So, you know, you may have some general ideas of where cold air is coming from, but you may have places that you're not as sure, and the winter is a great time to check that out. When you're more likely to have some windy days or at least a bit of wind coming around. And you can just take a match or a candle or even a stick of incense is a great way to do it. And walk around and see, you know, go around your doors, your windows, the window frame, and see where you'll get that telltale drifting of the smoke to show you where you may have some drafts coming into the house. And those are the places that you would want to focus on. There are a number of products that you can buy very, very low cost at any hardware store to provide sealing. It may be a matter, too. Maybe you have a door sweep or other products around your doors that have worn out. It'd be great to replace those. They won't last forever. I know I have one that I have to change quite a bit, I think. My house must settle or something. So every few years we're changing the doorstep
on the threshold there?
On the threshold. Thank you. right there on the threshold, you know. And some of those also you can get them where they can be adjusted, which can be important, too, if you live in a humid climate. Or if it's humid, I guess you guys do have some pretty humid weather there. I know I live in a very humid climate, and so we may have times where we use an adjustable threshold, and we can screw it down tighter during the summer when our door is swollen, and then loosen it up in the winter when the door is a bit loose to deal with that the gap under the door.
Yeah.
There are products that you could do in the short term. If you have some leaky windows but you don't have the money on hand to do a replacement right away or to buy storm windows, even the inexpensive window films can help cut down on wind infiltration. If you have blinds, you know, pull your blinds, put curtains, close your curtains, that kind of thing can all really help keep the cold air out and make you more comfortable at a lower temperature.
Yeah. This is the Afternoon Magazine. On the program today, ideas for reducing energy costs and improving the energy efficiency of our homes. Our guest this afternoon is Jennifer Thorne Amon. She's with the American Council for an Energy Efficient Economy, or ACEEE. She's also the lead author of Consumer Guide to Home Energy Saving, Save Money, Save the Earth. The book is published by New Society Publishers. You'll find a condensed version of the guide online. So you can Google AC and then triple E, three E's. The website is www.aceee.org. Listeners, you can join us this afternoon with your questions right now with a telephone call or with an email message. The phone number in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. Our toll-free number is 800-222-9455. The email address, will-talk@illinois.edu. Well, one of the things that we can do, too, that won't cost us a lot of money but pays off pretty quickly is replacing incandescent lights. How much can we save in terms of our electric bill by using incandescents? Maybe you could also talk about LED opportunities today.
Okay, sure. An incandescent lamp, you know, these are very inefficient, and one sign of it is just the heat that they give off. That's a sure sign that, you know, the electricity is going towards heat and not towards light. So a compact fluorescent bulb will use about a quarter of the power of an incandescent to get the same light output. If you haven't yet installed any compact fluorescents in your home, what you would want to do is pick those bulbs that are on for the most hours. That's where you're going to get the biggest bang for your buck. So start with the lights that you use the most, and then you can work back. So, focus on the closets less. That's probably the place where you don't have the lighting on a lot. But you can cut for each lamp that you change out, you'll save 75% of the energy costs. So it can be a really dramatic savings. The estimate is typically if you replace your five most used bulbs in your home with compact fluorescents, you'll save anywhere from $60 to $75 a year in energy costs. So that certainly more than pays for the cost of the CFLs. And then the great thing about them is they last much longer. Whereas a typical incandescent bulb lasts for 1,000 hours, a CFL can last for anywhere from 6 to 10,000 hours. So they're also a great option in places where it's difficult to change the lights. If you have cathedral ceilings, in some of your outdoor lighting, those are all places where it's really great to have the CFLs because of that, the longer-lived, their longer lives. A couple of things that I think are important to think about when you're looking for CFLs out in the marketplace, I would encourage everyone to look for CFLs that have an Energy Star label. The Energy Star requirements for CFLs include a number of performance requirements in addition to the energy savings features. And so that way you know that you're going to get some of the better compact fluorescents that don't have the flicker issues, the slow startup, and some of the other issues that plagued earlier compact fluorescents. So I would say if anybody bought a compact fluorescent, 15 or 20 years ago and had problems with its performance, know that the products on the market today are much, much improved, and the Energy Star is a way to make sure that you're getting the better products that are available.
Okay, I've got a caller listening, caller waiting for us, and I just want you to comment. We'll come back to the LEDs.
Okay.
But maybe you could comment on light quality in CFLs today. This is something that's also improved a great deal.
Absolutely. You know, one of the things that's really interesting about CFLs is you can get CFLs that come in different what's called color temperatures, and that's really, what the color that the light looks. Many people, we were raised with incandescent lighting, and so we're used to more of the yellow light, the warm kind of yellow tones of incandescent lighting. And that comes, it's interesting because and this is a great opportunity to do some education, because one of the things that I think is going to be very important as we talk about the evolution of LEDs, the shift to compact fluorescence, a whole new set of lighting technologies coming out into the marketplace, and we're really going to change the way that we talk about lighting and the products that we buy. And one of them is this issue of color temperature. So the incandescents give off a warm light. They have what's called a cool color temperature or a lower color temperature, typically around 2700 Kelvin. You can get compact fluorescents that have that warmer light in the 2700, 3000 Kelvin range. But you can also find CFLs that have more of a daylight color temperature, more in the 4 to 5000 Kelvin range. And what those are is it gives more light like sunlight. It's a bit of a bluer light, which some people do prefer, and some people like it in some rooms but not in others. You know, it really just depends.
Mm-hmm.
I found that I know some people who never thought that they liked that, but now they have it in their homes and they really do prefer now the cooler blue tones for the lighting. But it's an option that you didn't really have with incandescents, or if you did buy the daylight, the full spectrum or daylight incandescents, those had to have a coating on the bulb that made them even less efficient than they already are.
Really?
So you had a real energy penalty for going with these, what's often called a modified spectrum lamp, that you don't have that same energy penalty with some of the newer lighting technologies, like incandescents and like CFLs and LEDs, excuse me.
Okay.
So that's one thing. Some of the other issues with light quality are, you know, in the past there were lots of issues with flicker and compact fluorescence, which are less of a problem now, certainly, particularly the flicker issue. Another issue with the light quality is that the CFLs can often take a little bit longer to come to full brightness. That's an issue. The Energy Star requirements have, require the lamps to reach full brightness in a pretty short period of time. They aren't going to be, you know, very few compact fluorescents have the capability of coming to full brightness the instant you turn them on, like an incandescent. Mm-hmm. It's a different technology. So one of the things I always like to point out to people is, you know, some of the new lighting technologies are different technologies, so we can't expect identical performance. But you can say that, you know, you can take a look and say, is the trade-off of waiting, you know, 5 seconds or 10 seconds for my compact fluorescent to come to full brightness, you know, can I accept that trade-off given the tremendous energy savings and other benefits that I can get from this technology? So that's certainly another area where I think there are some differences. They've definitely improved, but I don't want to, you know, promise that there's no difference.
Yeah.
When indeed there is. It's just something that we have to get used to. Some of the products where we're still seeing a little bit more of that kind of issue are things like the reflector lamps that people may use in recessed cans, in particular, maybe in other fixtures, but particularly in recessed cans. That technology, I think, particularly for the dimming CFLs, you know, is still not ideal. You know, I think we're still waiting for more improvements. You know, I certainly live with it. My husband complains a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's all a part of, you know, the technology developing, and certainly we've seen a lot of improvement in those products. So that's another light quality issue that I think is important to bring up.
Let's take some calls. We're going to take a call from a listener in Champaign on line one. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I'm a HERS rater and home performance contractor in Champaign, so I'm pretty fired up about energy audits, of course, but I find that most people don't know what they are. We don't have a lot of awareness for something which for most people is kind of out of sight and out of mind. But what should I be doing? What should we be doing to try to reach out and really grab hold of people and get them to say, as you said, take action? And hurry up and call me for an energy audit.
Great. Well, it's great to hear from someone who's out in the field helping people improve their efficiency. You know, I would say the biggest opportunities are certainly in consumer education and in helping people understand why these investments will pay off over time. But, you know, one of the big things that I think is a problem is many times people don't know whether their home is performing above average, below average. You know, we all get our electricity bills, but I think most people would be hard-pressed to tell you whether their bill is higher or lower than their neighbors or their friends who live, you know, in their neighborhood in very similar houses to theirs, because it's, you know, you're not given any kind of meter for comparison. So to the extent that an auditor can come in and not only talk about the opportunities within the consumer's home, but help them see how their performance compares to others so that they understand that there's a real opportunity for them to capture the savings that others have captured, is an important approach. The other thing that I think is really important is we have found that most people who do move forward with energy audits are often looking for the non-energy benefits that come along with getting
air quality.
Yeah. So, you know, talking to people about how they can improve the comfort in their homes. You know, I think many people believe that there are always, you know, that it's just the way a house works and the way a heating or cooling system works that you're going to have some rooms that are comfortable and some rooms that aren't. And that doesn't have to be the case. And you know that. You certainly have the tools to help them achieve comfort throughout their house and help their house run better. So looking at those non-energy benefits and the things that can be done to improve their comfort, if they have rooms where they have bad indoor air quality, you know, they may certainly be concerned if they have members of the family that have health issues. You know, all of these are the reasons why we find people are most likely to invest in home improvement projects. And so talking about how the services you provide can address those concerns of theirs with the added benefit of energy savings to help pay for those improvements is really important. And I would encourage you to talk with your utilities, your state energy office, anybody else in the state that has a stake in improving efficiency and reducing energy use in the state about ways that they can work with you if they aren't already to better publicize the services that are available and also to look at how they can work you know, through the utility commission, through with some of the new programs that are rolling out from the Department of Energy and so forth to build up the capacity and to provide incentives, financing for residents to do this kind of work. You know, there's some really interesting new financing tools that are being made available. We're finding communities that are putting together different kinds of bond funding or loan pools, different ways to finance for residents energy efficiency improvements in their home. And oftentimes that's an efficiency. The idea is that you can help people offset the cost of the efficiency improvement, and then they can pay off the projects over a much longer time frame at very attractive interest rates on their utility bills or even on their property tax bills. And the nice thing about that is you get a much longer payback term. Oftentimes, it's a cash flow neutral situation in that the savings that you get from the project, you know, are equivalent to what you have to pay back. So you don't see a real difference in your cash flow once you pay that extra bit on your utility bill or your property tax bill. And the other thing that can be really attractive about some of these new financing tools is that they transfer with the house, whether it's on the utility bill or the property tax bill. So you could go ahead and engage in a project even if you say, well, you know, I think I'm going to probably move in 4 or 5 years. Why would I do these things that have a longer payback? Well, because you only have to pay for them while you're there.
And I want to ask the listener, while we got you here on the line, just very quickly, in terms of looking for someone to do an audit, someone like yourself, is there an accreditation? Are there certain things that a consumer should look for in terms of the auditor's expertise, in terms of their education, and so on and so forth?
Well, I'm a HERS rater. HERS is the home energy rating system that the Energy Star program is based on.
Okay.
So I'm certified to place
certified.
The Energy
okay.
Star label on new homes. And then the Building Performance Institute system does the Energy Star existing homes with Energy Star program, and I'll be doing that later on this year. So there are some accreditation systems, and there are also people out there who are just self-taught, which is what I was before I became a HERS rater.
Okay. Well, thanks for the call this afternoon.
Sure. I'd also like to mention while we're on the line that there will be an energy efficiency talk where Mr. DeVries, who's been really pushing this municipal bonding thing, is going to speak, and I think that's Friday at 3 o'clock at the M2 building, fourth floor. So if people want to know more about that, they can go to ccnet.com and to hear all about the possible legislation. Of course, call Senator Frerichs and tell him that they support it. He is sponsoring this bill through Congress, and, of course, that gives people the ability to borrow money against the property, and then that goes onto the tax roll so that even if the property is sold, what we find is that people are real concerned that they're not going to own the house or the business long enough that they'll get their money back in it. So I'd encourage people to go to ccnet.org and look at that, and also to go to Green Light Renovation and contact me for an audit.
Okay, well,
thank you.
Let's go on to another caller, a listener in McLean County, and then also I've got an email question as well. But first we're going to take a listener call from McLean County. Line 2, hi.
Hi. If I'm right, you were on some time ago, and I remember you mentioned some names of some brands that work better because we bought some, my husband bought some, and they basically burn out because they say it'll last you for so many years, and they burn out really quickly. And is there any brand names you could mention in terms of?
Yeah, well, actually, I would recommend a few things. Okay. If you've purchased lamps that were Energy Star qualified, that came with the Energy Star label, and they have not met your expectations, I would encourage you to contact the Energy Star program through all the contact information is on the website at energystar.gov, because they certainly want to track that.
Okay.
And make sure that those manufacturers are held to the standards that they're saying that they're meeting.
Mm-hmm.
So so that's really important to help you and other consumers that are trying to do the right thing. So that would be an important first step.
Okay.
You know, beyond that, all of the manufacturers that have products certified for Energy Star, you know, should be meeting the requirements. You know, I'd rather not recommend any particular brand name, because
okay.
anybody who's participating in the program has signed, you know, an agreement saying that they're going to live up to those requirements and that their products will be tested. And there certainly is testing that's being done, but, you know, sometimes products, you know, one, you know, may come off the manufacturing line meeting the standards, and then, you know, the next run may have problems where they're not. But I would say, you know, any of the major manufacturers, household
okay.
names,
okay.
if you see a familiar brand name, that's
okay.
probably a great way to go.
All right.
They have their brand to protect. The other thing that I would mention is if you're using the lamps in places where they're turned on and off a lot, that can impact the lifetime of a CFL. I have found, you know, typically they still are cost effective, but you will not get the, you may not get the lifetime claims if you have it in a place such as a closet or a hallway or somewhere, a bathroom, where they're being turned on and off quite frequently.
I want to thank the listener for her call this afternoon. As I understand it, if you've got a fluorescent of any kind in a room, you don't want to, the energy it takes, now let me see if I can say this correctly. But anyway, let's say, for example, right now I'm sitting in a radio studio, so I'm away from my desk. Well, I have a task lamp that's a fluorescent bulb, and I'm away here for an hour or more. I turn that off when I come into the studio. But if I was just going to be away from my desk for a few minutes, I wouldn't turn that off. Am I on the right track?
Yeah, you know, I think that makes sense. Now, there are a couple of different things that I'll just say as differentiators. Particularly if it's a compact fluorescent lamp, so one that you know basically can be screwed in just like your incandescent,
mm-hmm.
or is that general shape. These are the ones that are really impacted by what we call short cycle time. So being, you know, turned on for 3 or 5 minutes, turned off, turned back on only for 3 to 5 minutes, and turned off. So oftentimes people don't use them as much with, you know, occupancy sensors, even if they are approved for use with dimmers and switches and that kind of thing. The energy savings that you get from those those lamps mean that if you leave it on, you know, if you're stepping in and out, leaving it on isn't really going to cost you much, and you will get a much more lifetime out of the bulb. That's not so much of an issue if you have linear fluorescent lamps, the kind that you see in offices, which are increasingly used in a lot of fixtures that we see around the house. You know, I know I just replaced a bathroom fixture and have a new linear fluorescent fixture there. And those are much less impacted by the frequent switching off and on, so you don't have to worry about it as much. And that's why you'll see occupancy sensors used quite often in offices with a pretty short cycle time.
Okay. Let's take another call. A listener in Champaign, line one. Good afternoon.
Hi.
Hi.
I waited a long now, on and off, so answered most of the fluorescent. I had a question there, but just taking care of it. The only thing that my comment about fluorescent, which I have a number of them, is that, you know, it says 5 to 7 years. Well, that's pretty hard to tell whether it lived up to the expectation. You know what I mean? You know, in other words, you know, how much do you use it? How often? All that kind of stuff. So, so far, I don't know. I haven't had them 5 years yet. What about building codes? One of the things that really bothers me is that in terms of cities, in terms of bringing up their building codes, it's like insulation, things that, you know, what's the position on, I know we have one of the solar houses here, not solar, it's a passive solar house, and they've insulated, you know, on the ceiling or into the roof about 60, and on the sides is 50. And, I mean, it really cuts down on the use of energy. But so what is there any recommendations in terms of your association in that regard or not? Depends where you live, too. I mean, we're in...
Right. I can talk a little bit about, you know, the role of codes and kind of some very exciting things that I think are happening in terms of code adoption and enforcement around the country. First, I'll just answer one quick question about your lighting 5 to 7 years number, because I think this is something people are going to be paying a lot of attention to. Certainly, if you see a claim that's 5 to 7 years, you'd want to know what their assumptions are. We typically talk about lifetimes for compact fluorescents of 6 to 10,000 hours, which just says, you know, that's how long it's going to be operated, and you can decide how many, you know, how often you use it and how long that's going to last. Fortunately, we should see by June the Federal Trade Commission will be coming out with new labeling regulations for lighting products. And so consumers are going to have a lot better information, a lot more information, and a lot better information to allow them to compare the performance of different lighting products in the marketplace. It will allow them to look at incandescents, halogen, CFL, LED, and compare the products on the same metrics in a standardized fashion. So, and one of those is going to be lifetime, and that likely will be reported in hours. That's certainly what we've been advocating. So I know everybody has lots of questions about lighting, and hopefully there will be some assistance in the marketplace soon to help folks. As for the code issue, you know, I think you know, codes are certainly a critical cornerstone of energy policy for buildings and an area that we've been active in for many, many years. Some interesting developments have come about recently with energy codes. So the energy code for residential buildings, there's a model code at the national level that's adopted, and it's revised every 3 years. So, and then states actually decide to adopt the code. It's not adopted at the national level. There's a model code, and then states will adopt it, and many times states will make adjustments to that model code for specific issues related to their climate or other issues they have in the state. For instance, California has their own building codes that far exceed the model standards because they have a market and a let's say they have the political situation that allows a much stronger code. But you know, states will make different changes to the code so that it better fits their climate or other issues going on in the state. To date, there has been kind of a mixed bag in terms of adoption of the code. And there's also been a very, very big difference in the degree to which the code is complied with and enforced at the state and local level. A couple of interesting things that have happened, and I would encourage anyone who's interested in this issue to talk to folks in your state government about the importance that you see for building codes and in the importance in getting better enforcement of codes at the local level in your own community. Basically, the stimulus bill that was passed just over a year ago had placed requirements on states. If states accepted some of the money from the stimulus under certain sections of the stimulus program, they had to sign a commitment that within 8 years they would have 95% compliance with building codes in their state. So we are out now working with a coalition of advocacy organizations, the state energy offices, and others to help build the capacity in the states, to remind the states that they don't want to wait that 8 years to even adopt a code if they don't already have one, that they need to go ahead and adopt codes now so they have time to work on enforcement and compliance. There will be a very big step up in funding availability from the federal government to states to support building code official training, to do training for others in the building industry to make sure that they understand what the code is and how they can meet the code requirements. And then at the code adoption level, we're seeing some real improvements in the code so that the IECC, which is the model code for buildings for the 2009 version, represented about a 15 to 20% improvement over the previous code, and we're hoping to make some supplemental changes to that to get a 30% improvement. So the states would be would be required to adopt a standard at least as stringent as that IECC 2009. And then really take steps to increase and improve enforcement and compliance among builders in the state. So I think we have a real opportunity to see some improvements and much more effective use of this really important policy tool.
And now I have a question from someone who's written in on the email. This listener has a drafty pet door. Any advice for improving that situation?
Well, it's kind of hard to do a lot about, you cut a hole in a door, it's going to leak. So that's kind of the way it goes. Certainly to the extent that, using drapes would be helpful. If you could put a drape over the door to... a heavy, like weather drape to curtain, to at least cut down on the ability of air to blow through into the room. Anything that could be done around the edges of the pet door. This is certainly an area far out of my expertise. But anything that could be done around the edges of the pet door to create a better seal when it closes. You know, I know some of that might depend on the age and size of the pet. Make sure they would be able to open get through the pet door. But, you know, anything that you could do to try to create as solid of a seal around the door when it's not being used, that would be, you know, I think the best option. Beyond that, I think it would really be a matter of determining whether you really needed to have
a pet door
or if you could just time the time to take out the pet.
Yeah. And you're coming down here on time, and I'm wondering what else should we talk about before we have to wrap up? We don't have anybody waiting on the telephone, and we just took our email question. What would you like to emphasize here at the end of our discussion today, Jennifer?
Well, you know, I would encourage people to go and look at our Home Energy Checklist for Action and check out on the website if there are particular areas in the house where they know they have some changes that they need to make, or they know that they've got an old appliance, or they're using more energy. Certainly look at those specific sections to see what they might do, what some of the behavioral changes they might be able to make, some different practices that could improve their energy consumption. But beyond that, I would encourage people to find out, you know, it really is important to know where you stand in terms of energy consumption. There are a few tools on the web that can help you get a better sense of how your performance might compare with your neighbors or, you know, similar houses in your area. That's certainly one place to start. We have links to those resources on our website. But if you can, you know, really bring in a professional and help them, let them help you decide what you can do to reduce your energy consumption. They can help you prioritize the improvements that you need to make. And so if you're not able to do a large project right away, you can certainly, they can help you prioritize so you can get the most bang for your buck and go as far as you can in the near term. I would encourage you to contact your local utilities. That's both your electric and gas utilities and your water utilities. All of them at different times offer different kinds of incentives and rebates for if you have appliances that you need to replace, for instance. Take a look and see what kind of tax incentives are available. It may make sense. Maybe you're planning on replacing your furnace next year. Maybe you'll go ahead and do it this year given the aggressive tax incentives that are in place. So, you know, I think it's really a matter of getting the information that you need to understand what you can do to improve efficiency in your home, where you need to go, and then putting it into your plan, you know, so you can plan and budget for it over the next year. And certainly, I would say, you know, if folks are listening and these issues are of interest to you, you're concerned about the impact of energy costs on consumers, the impact on excessive energy use and energy waste on the environment, contact your elected officials and let them know that this is an issue that you're very interested in, very concerned about, and that you'd like to see more action taken to improve the efficiency of buildings throughout our country.
There we have to leave it. Jennifer, thank you so much for talking with us this afternoon.
Oh, sure. My pleasure, Celeste.
Jennifer Thorne Amon is with the American Council for an Energy Efficient Economy, or ACEE. She's also lead author of The Consumer Guide to Home Energy Savings, Save Money, Save the Earth. The book is in a paperback edition. It's now in its ninth edition, and it is published by New Society Publishers. You'll find a condensed version of the guide online. So Google ACEE, Consumer Guide, and you will get there. It is 1:53 Central Time, and settlement prices are in now from Kansas City and Chicago. Here with those numbers, Todd Gleason.
Thank you very much. Taking a look at the numbers, Celeste, in Chicago as they finished up for the day. In the wheat pit, futures were lower. They were lower in the corn and the soybeans, too. Actually, soybeans tried to take a stab at following through yesterday, and corn and wheat got pulled along with it. But by mid-session, they were, well, evidently not going to make that, and futures turned around and sent themselves lower on the end of the trading day. In the wheat pit, futures were down 9.5 cents for the soft red winter wheat, a 501.5 top, bottom at 491. Settlement price at 491.75, down 9.5 cents. May contract to 515.25 top, bottom at 504.75. Settlement price at 505.75, 9.5 lower. In July futures, 527.75 for the high. The low at 517, settled 518.25, 9.5 lower. September contract, 543 the high. The low at 33.75. Settled on that low at $5.33, down 9.5 cents. In Chicago and Kansas City, nearby May wheat, down 10.25. A settlement price on its low for the day at $4.98.25, down 10.25. From the corn pit back in Chicago, a high price today at $3.73, a low at $3.67.25, could not hold on to the gains from yesterday or overnight. And settlement price was at $3.67.75, down 3.75 for the day. The May futures, $3.84 the high, the low at $3.78.25. Settlement price at $3.78.75, down 4 cents. In July contract, $3.94.5 the high. The low at 389, settlement price at 389.25, down 4.5 cents. September futures, 401.75 the high, the low at 396.25, settlement price at 396.5, down 4.75. And December contract in the corn pit, the harvest month, $4.09 the high, the low at 402.5, settled at 403, 5 cents lower for December corn. The March contract at 2011, down 4.5 at 414.25. March oat futures today, 1.5 lower. Settlement price at 226.5, the high at 230, the low at 223.75. May contract down 2 cents. 239 was the high, the low at 232. Settlement price at $2.35. They finished 2 cents lower. March bean meal futures, or rather soybean futures on the afternoon, like this for the day, 9 cents lower, 978.75 the high, the low at 52. $9.52. Settlement price at $9.52.5, down 9 cents. May contract for the soybeans, $9.85 the high. Low at $9.58.5, and a settlement price at $9.59.5, down 9.5 cents. There was some non-commercial and even some commercial-led buying early in the session. Beans couldn't hang on to those gains either. July futures, $9.90.25 the high, the low at $9.65. Settlement price at $9.65.5, down 9.75. August contract, $9.84.25 the high. Low at 9.61¾, settlement price at 9.61¼, down 9¼. November futures, 8.5 cents lower, 9.45¾ the high, the low at 26. Settlement price at 9.27¼, down 8.5 cents. January futures of 2011, 9.54½ the high, the low at 35¼. Settlement price at $9.35¾, down 8¾. March soybean meal, 289.60 the high, the low at 279.50. Settlement price at 279.60, down $2.10. The May futures, 283.60 the high. Low at 273.50, settled 273.90, down 180. March bean oil contract at 38.97 high, low at 38.30. Settlement price 38.31, down 52. And the May futures in the bean oil pit, 39.43 the high, the low at 38.75. May bean oil at 38.78, down 52 cents on the end of the day trade. I'll have more during the closing mark report this afternoon when we talk with the folks at L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Rebecca King in Galesburg at 309-341-5007. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
Livestock contracts finish lower on the day today. February live cattle, 92.20 the high, 91.60 the low. The settlement, 91.75 down 30. April, 93.15 the high, 92.20 the low, 92.42.5 the settlement, down 80. June, 90.75 the high, 90.15 the low, 90.50 the settlement, down 45. August, 89 even the high, the low, 88.27.5 the settlement, 88.60 down 65. March feeder cattle, 101.65 the high, the low, 101 even the settlement, 101.15 down 67.5. April, 103.05 the high, 102.37.5 the low, the settlement, 102.47.5 down 70. May, 103.50 the high, 103.02.5 the low, the settlement, 103.22.5 down 82.5. August, 104.65 the high, 104.35 the low, the settlement, 104.40 down 85. April lean hog, 70.90 the high, 69.05 the low, 69.45 the settlement, down 85. May, 77 even the high, 75.40 the low, the settlement, 76.17.5 down 72.5. June, 80.10 the high, the low, 78.50 the settlement, 79.05 that was down 67.5 cents. July, 79.75 the high, the low, 78.45, 79.12.5 the settlement, that down 42.5. And March bellies, 85.10 the high, the low, 84 even the settlement, 84 even that down 280. The Dow is currently off 81 points at 10,303. The NASDAQ down 24 at 2218. The S&P 500 off 11 points at 1,097. Nearby crude oil up 35 cents to $80.16 a barrel. This is Illinois Public Media, WILL, 580 AM and 90.9 FM, HD2 and HD3 Urbana. You'll find us online at will.illinois.edu. I'm Celeste Quinn. Thanks for tuning in today. Coming up, news from National Public Radio and the Closing Market Report. Following the Closing Market Report, we'll hear about Urbana's planning initiative for the city's farmers market, Market at the Square. Lisa Braltz will join us this afternoon following the Closing Market Report. Mike Solo's forecast for Illinois and Indiana this afternoon. In northeastern Illinois and northern and central Indiana, cloudy with snow, showers, and flurries. In western and southern Illinois, a mix of clouds and sunshine. Elsewhere,